Chapter 13. The Right Question. The children of the forest looked at the king, and the king looked down at them. The silver thread of the oath led to the grove, to them and their blades. He didn't mind dying. He was very close to death already, to the clean, sharp perfection of it. One small step away over a thin line to silence and the shining silver piece that he would have earned, made perfect with all his oaths made good. But looking at them and their blades, only another pack of hungry, grasping, slow-rotting creatures, he knew with sudden certainty that they wouldn't send him over that line. They meant to drag him back in the opposite direction, to ruin him, carve away his crown and make him mortal dross once more in the butchering. And the idea sickened him, filled him with fresh winter rage. He drew a breath he didn't need anymore in order to speak to them and said one word, a cold, savage demand. Why? Let every man of honor stand forth and answer the call, a voice said from behind him. And the king looked around and in a sharp indignation saw the very last of his servants, the grasping oathbreaker who'd squirmed his way into his service, sitting his steed at the edge of the clearing, very near, his sword and dragonglass drawn. Those were your words, the oathbreaker said. Strange how easy it is to stop being one, isn't it? Here you are yourself, thinking up excuses so you can get out of going into that clearing. Shall I help you? I'm very good at them. The world doesn't deserve your sacrifice. They don't. He jerked his head towards the children. They did this to you, to every king in the north who's ever answered the call. They didn't even ride with you against the dead. They hid here in the north. And even your brave and loyal riders, they all seem to have abandoned you. All those so-called heroes, the ones you raised up and chose. The only one left is me, and well, he shrugged, spreading his arms wide, deprecating. We're all worthless, aren't we? Oathbreakers, cowards, faithless, not a man of honor to be had anywhere among us. So why should you keep your oath? Am I getting near the mark? He added mockingly. The king glared upon him in white rage to hear thoughts so near his own in the oathbreaker's mouth. And the oathbreaker smiled at him, a bitter, twisting smile, and said softly, such good excuses, too. Only you have to answer one question yourself. How dare you? His voice dropped to barely more than a whisper. How dare you have treated me like dirt for not being a man of honor? If you aren't going to be one yourself, now, when it matters. He said it with a hiss, and the king drew his own sword, fury bright and clean, and rode straight at him. The oathbreaker didn't meet his blade directly. He deflected it off with the tilt of his sword and feinted in with the dragonglass dagger. He leaned back under a returning swing and then ducked away to the opposite side and plunged the dragonglass blade into the eye of his steed and sent it tumbling. The king leapt clear before it had struck the ground and looked at the other steed. In an instant, it flung the oathbreaker off its back, rearing, and went bounding away into the dark. The oathbreaker rolled back up to his feet and charged towards him. The king didn't move, waiting coldly for him to draw close. He would take the traitor by the throat and crush the breath out of him. But instead, the oathbreaker came in only almost close enough. And then he dropped to the ground and rolled past him instead and slashed at him with the dragonglass blade, so the king had to step lightly to evade it. And when he did, a grotesque, searing line of agony went shooting up his leg. He jerked his head to look down and saw that the ground in a small circle nearby was littered with small, spiky caltrops, forged of iron, made to hold a sliver of dragonglass pointing up. The oathbreaker had rolled past and up onto his feet, and he was charging again. Again, he didn't meet the king's blade straight on, true strength to true strength. He only angled the blow away and made a quick stabbing in return that missed, then twisted back away. The king pursued him more warily. The Oathbreaker retreated back through the weirwoods, darting in among the trunks. The Oathbreaker led him on an infuriating dance, refusing to meet him truly, coming at him from one side and now another, his blows always falling short, but keeping just out of range. "I have to wonder, why did you even come back north?" he asked tauntingly. "If you weren't going to keep the oath, why bother? You could have stayed on the other side of the wall and just killed everyone now instead of waiting 1,000 years to do it." Rage knifed through the king. He should have done that. He should have kept winter upon the world until everything mortal had gone into stillness and silence. Even at last the children and their ancient trees, until there was no one left to hold the oath. And he, too, could end, still silver, perfect and true. He would do it as soon as he had the chance. He understood now, too late, why the king before him had gone south. "Did you mean to do it all this way?" the Oathbreaker said, darting aside at the last moment. So the king stepped again into another patch of ground salted with dragonglass spikes, and the sharp pain struck up through his legs and into his chest, lines of foul heat running through his body. "It seems rather pathetic, balking at the last fence. Is dying really so terrifying?" The king only looked at him coldly and stepped off the spikes and pursued him onward steadily. He did not have the power here, inside the prison of the wall, to crush the Oathbreaker's mind. But he would never sink, never yield, and the Oathbreaker could never slay him, not with dragon glass or even with dragon steel. He was not true, still only a putrid, rotting carcass clinging to life inside dying flesh, and he would falter. But for a long time he kept dodging and weaving through the trees, skillful and quick and strong with stolen power. "Or is it the crown you don't want to give up?" the Oathbreaker said as he evaded. "Power is sweet, isn't it? Perhaps you should have had more pity on old Robert. What king would ever want to give up their throne just because a greater one arose?" And that was too close. Anger rose in the king again, a fury that was not wholly cold. He would not be true either if he did not keep the oath. And he could not keep the oath without being made false. A vicious, sly trap worse than the wall itself, impossible to escape. The king surged back into the pursuit, and to his satisfaction he saw that little by little the Oathbreaker grew more sluggish, his blows coming more weakly. He was stumbling back from one thin patch of snowy ground to another all around the clearing, scurrying and hiding, until finally the king lunged close and managed to catch his blade just well enough and struck it from his hand. Even as it flew, the mortal steel of it shattered into 1,000 stinging shards, vanishing into the snow. Clutching only his dragonglass dagger, the Oathbreaker retreated toward the clearing, as if he thought the children of the forest would aid him, when they were cowards as great as he was. They scattered away as the king pursued the Oathbreaker into the open ground, and he fell backwards against the greatest of trees and sank into a deep crouch at its foot, panting, watching him as a coward watched death approaching. And then he had the gall to straighten and raise his head and smirk at him with a false, insouciant pride. "You're not half bad, Stark," the Oathbreaker said, "but I'm better." The king looked at him with disdain and went towards him. He was not curious. He did not care why the Oathbreaker thought something so foolish. And then he raised the sword for the final shattering blow, and the Oathbreaker gestured behind him. "Don't you want to see the day break?" And the king did turn, in a sudden clenching of dread, too late, to see the glowing red leaves in the upper branches of the weirwoods at the eastern edge of the clearing, as the sun broke over them and struck him full in the face. The The instant the sun hit him, Rob fell forward onto his hands and knees and started to heave at once, his whole body convulsing as the blood vomited out of his mouth. Fountains of it, red and steaming and thick, pouring out of him, gobbets of mangled flesh coming up with it. Jamie was on his knees, vomiting himself, gasping with horror as it all came back up. Every last drop and bite of rotting flesh and blood, but he'd barely eaten half a fruit. And when it was out of him, he crawled over on hands and knees, still gasping for breath and spitting, to get hold of Rob as he went on, vomiting up the gouts of death. Jamie pulled him up against his body, trying to hold Rob's head up a little so he could get a breath even while still heaving out more, spasming as his body tried to rid itself of all the poison. Jamie held him close through the rest of it, blood everywhere all around them, soaking into sunlit ground, mingling with the false blood-red leaves. The purging went on for what felt as long and agonizing as another long night. Jamie wasn't sure at first if it was even helping. Maybe he'd only found one more way to torture Rob before the end. But then another enormous heaving racked Rob's body, a gushing, vile torrent. And after it came out, Rob was gripping onto him with one hand, holding tight and desperate. And even though he was sick again and again and again, he was growing warm beneath Jamie's hands, sweat springing out on his skin until he was dripping with it, until he finally stopped vomiting and dragged in a sobbing breath, wiped his mouth on the back of his hand, and fell back against him into his lap, limp and exhausted and alive and mortal. And he croaked out, "Water," in a wavering voice, a plea. Jamie gasped something like a laugh, full of helpless relief, and got the water skin he'd dropped in the clearing before. Rob groped for it with a shaking, urgent hand, and Jamie helped him sit up and squeezed cold, melted snow into his mouth while he rinsed and spat over and over until he wasn't spitting red anymore. Then Rob took one small swallow of cold water and sank back against him again, his head tipping to rest against Jamie's shoulder, his eyes closing, and half disbelieving. Jamie put his hand against Rob's brow, gently, just below where the last prongs of the silver crown still grew out of his head. He could gladly have gone on sitting there, just carefully holding Rob in his arms for days, a gift the gods had handed him, however grudging and belated, as if he'd somehow managed to do enough by the end to level out all his dishonor and cowardice and broken oaths. He still couldn't quite believe it had worked. Rob and the riders had always stayed behind the sun, so he'd hoped it would hurt him enough to make it possible to do the unbearable thing that it had to be done. But Jamie hadn't let himself hope it would heal him. He just barely started to let himself believe it now. His breath was slowly easing. And then the children of the forest began to come creeping back out of the trees, closing in around them. And the one in front, the one with the longest knife, said, "The king must still yield his crown." Jamie stared at her, his arms tightening, but Rob stirred and struggled up out of his grip. Onto his knees, he said, "Yes," raggedly, but without the least hesitation. He turned to Jamie and reached up a hand that trembled like a wavering leaf in a wind and cupped his cheek to bring him around. Rob leaned his head in and hesitated, just short of his lips, a question, and Jamie felt tears spring his eyes. He leaned in and answered it, catching his mouth again, for the first time warm and sweet, and kissed him hungrily until Rob broke away again, a wet track of his own tears sliding down his face, grief clenching it, but without the slightest wavering in resolution. "Thank you," he whispered. Tell my father. Tell John and Brienne. What, that I let a pack of murderous grumpkins cut off your head? Jaime said in rising incredulity. I don't think I will. With a grunt of effort, he stood up out from under Rob's hand and seized ice from where Rob had dropped it on the grass, blood running off the blade like water, and stepped between him and the children. Rob was staring up at him, clearly still dazed by nausea and martyrdom. Jaime, do you feel the slightest impulse to go bury yourself in the far north for 1,000 years and rise to cover the lands in darkness? Jaime demanded, and Rob paused. You're not going to become the Night's King anymore. You didn't have to die for that. You just had to go into the sun. You'd only have to die to give back the crown. Rob slowly reached up a hand to touch the crown that had grown into his skull, impossible to take off, unless you took the head off with it. He stared up at him, and Jaime nodded. Which means you had the right question to start with. Why? He turned back to the children. Well? He asked. Why does the king in the north have to give you back the crown now that he's finished cleaning up your mess? And it wasn't the slightest surprise to see the children's faces going still, their green eyes hardening. They didn't say anything, and Jaime grinned slowly at them, in bright, dawning recognition. The Starks are wonderful, aren't they? He said softly. So loyal and true and brave, so trusting, just aching to hurl themselves off cliffs and into hopeless causes. Less like direwolves and more like lemmings, really, he added, throwing a smirk back at the half-bewildered glare that Rob shot at him, almost not believing that he was being teased right now. But unfortunately for you, I'm not a Stark. I'm a Lannister, and I understand exactly why you want the crown back, and it's not to save the world or Rob. You just want the power back. The children still didn't speak. Their mouths were pressed into lines like the slits in the weirwood trees. Rob slowly pushed himself up to his feet, at Jamie's side, and looked down at them, his face gone flinty. And as soon as he had, Jaime knew it was true. The power was still there. The rot, the death was gone out of him. The horrible putrefaction he'd had to swallow to stop the risen dead. But Rob's eyes were still lit from within by that silvery blue radiance. And the children drew back from him a little, dropping their eyes. They didn't want to meet the power of that gaze, full of truth and honor and cold, hard judgment. Jaime nodded. You had to give the power to the king in the north to stop the Night's King from killing every living thing in Westeros, including you. But all along, you must have been hoping that sooner or later you'd get a Stark who would keep the oath and hand you back the crown at the end. And as soon as you had that power back, you'd use it to come at us again. He paused and then huffed a small laugh. This would have been a good time for it too, wouldn't it? Riding here, it felt like half the kingdom had starved to death or frozen. And that's whoever was left after the dead rose up all over. Tell me something, out of curiosity. How does the long night start anyway? Is it just an accident of timing, or do you... He trailed off. He didn't need them to admit it. Their faces did that plainly. And anyway, the whole scheme was also beautifully obvious if you knew anything about people. Ordinary, selfish, greedy, short-sighted people. And all the lies they'd tell and all the vicious things they'd do to protect themselves and destroy their enemies. And of course they weren't going to let anything like shame stand in the way of winning a war they'd been fighting for thousands of years. The children traded glances, and then their hands tightened on the hilt of their knives. I wouldn't if I were you, Jaime said, and looked past the children. About time you made it here. I was starting to think I'd have to fight them all by myself. The children looked around behind themselves and went still. Brienne and Jon Snow were there at the far end of the clearing. Their own blades drawn, with the entire pack of 6 direwolves gathered around them, crouched low and baring teeth. and three giants were standing behind them with dragonglass-studded clubs, their faces craggy and disapproving. "No," Snow said, his face hard with rage. "You won't have to do that." The children stood for another moment, rigid, and then they were gone, vanishing back and away into the trees around them, melting into the boughs and disappearing swiftly. Even as they went, the direwolf in the lead was bounding across the clearing, tall as a man at the shoulder, and as it reached him, Rob threw his arms around its neck and buried his face into its fur, clinging. Then John and Brienne were there and hugging him as well, crying and smiling at once in joy. And first Brienne and then even John looked up and reached out an arm, and Jaime swallowed and went to them. They drew him in, and he joined them, all their arms around Rob, holding their true king, who could, after all, be his king as well, with the last oath shattered to pieces around them. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic and would like to leave a comment, either for myself or for the author, you're more than welcome to do so. If you'd like to leave a comment for me, the podficker, the place to do that is on the podfic post, which is probably where you found this podfic in the first place. If you would like to leave a comment for the author, the place to do that is on the text post, which will be linked from the podfic post. Thanks for listening. Reader's note. So I had actually intended to start publishing this right around the solstice in 2025, like the winter solstice. That had sort of been the hope. But for a whole variety of reasons, that did not happen. And I really wanted to finish recording it before I started posting any of it. And so now it's into January 2026. And as I finished recording this, as I recorded the last three chapters, four chapters? I think I recorded four chapters today. As I recorded the last chunk of the fic, it is blizzarding outside. And very, very cold where I live. And so I just sort of felt like that was immersive. And anyway, it felt thematic.